47th rotation around the sun. Our station was born on this day out of the common unity of progressive ideals, the need to bring a voice to the voiceless and power to the powerless. In honor of our founders and in celebration of community radio, we ask that today you make a one-time pledge of $47 or $470. Donate now. Visit WPFWFM.org. WPFW, changing the world one broadcast at a time.
Born of Haitians.
This is a journey.
Would you join me, please, in welcoming me?
Redeem a full of culture.
I got so much trouble on my mind. Refuse to lose. Here's your ticket.
Amazing. I didn't know nothing about
it. I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome to the Collision. This is where sports and politics collide here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM, WMFW, trying to change this world one broadcast at a time. Joined by the coach this week, Kevin McNutt. Kevin McNutt, how you doing, sir?
Doing well, good man, doing well. Always doing well. I'm with you, DZ.
Man, we have so much to discuss. I don't even know where to begin, Kevin McNutt. I don't even know where to begin, but let's start right here. Let's talk about this. You are somebody who, in your family, has someone who played the top level of women's college basketball. So you have been around this game for a long time. Your daughter played at Georgetown.
Right.
Did you ever think you would see a day where a women's final eight game in the NCAA tournament, final eight, not final four, elite eight, whatever you want to call it, would get a higher rating than the World Series, the NBA Finals, every single broadcast of Thursday night NFL football, and every single college football game for an entire year other than Ohio State versus Michigan? Did you ever think you would see a day like that?
Wow, big boy, you come out strong. But look, I'm gonna come out stronger before we get to that. And that's a loaded question. I'm gonna serve it back to you with a big question on that. But I got to say this, Dave. Do you know? And I know you do know. April 4th, Martin Luther King's assassination day. Memphis, Tennessee, 1968.
Yes.
Got to get mentioned there. You know what I'm saying? Very well, I remember it well. And
I want to talk to you about these women's college basketball ratings, but you're absolutely correct. We always need to make space for April 4th. Right. And I lost track of the dates. We're also only a few days away, coach, mm-hmm. from I believe it's April 7th, which 50 years ago on April 7th, you know what happened that day.
Come tell me.
All right. You want me to tell you?
Yes, sir.
You sure?
Yeah.
Henry Aaron. 715th home run.
There it is. Okay. All right. Yeah.
You're right. I'm sorry. April 8th. April 8th, 1974. Henry Aaron, 50 years. That is a huge deal as well in the history of sports and social.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. Okay. I remember that well. I mean, watching that one. But just had to mention there. No.
It is worth saying. Let's just say this. I do want to ask you about the incredible ratings for women's basketball and what the implications are, why it's happening. Do you see a leap in terms of the skill level compared to when your progeny was playing at Georgetown? But before we get there, just to say all respect to the memory of Dr. Martin Luther King, yes, somebody who, in the words of Sister Soulja, tried to teach the Western world the meaning of the word humanity.
Yes, sir.
And somebody as well who believed strongly in the power of sports,
mm-hmm,
method for social change.
Yes.
Like, let us recall that if today...
Tell a story, Dave. You said it before, but refresh our folks, our listeners. Go ahead.
Absolutely. April 4th, 1968, Dr. Martin Luther King is assassinated, of course, at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee. April 3rd, April 2nd, April 1st, he was somebody who was publicly standing with the Olympic Project for Human Rights, the black athletes, although it wasn't exclusively black athletes, but the black athletes who were attempting to boycott the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City on civil rights grounds.
Yes, sir.
They wanted Avery Brundage, who was an open racist and sympathizer. They nicknamed him Slavery Avery. They wanted Avery Brundage, the head of the International Olympic Committee, to step down. They wanted Muhammad Ali, who they called the warrior saint of the black athletes' revolt. They wanted his title restored to him. It had been taken away because of his opposition to the war in Vietnam and his opposition to the draft. Mm-hmm. They wanted more black coaches hired because at the time there was one black track and field coach in the entire U.S. Olympic pipeline, which is unbelievable. And they also wanted South Africa and Rhodesia disinvited from the Olympics because of their apartheid policies. Those were their demands.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. supported those demands from the top of his head to the soles of his feet, was out there publicly with Dr. Harry Edwards saying that. Mm-hmm. Yep. And keep in mind, this was at a time when there were a lot of people in the leadership of the civil rights movement who were against the Olympic Project for Human Rights.
Mm-hmm.
They also thought sports and politics should not mix.
Right.
They also believed that it was a distraction. They also believed it would peeve off too many Caucasians and make their job of fighting for reforms in Washington more difficult. But Dr. King said, no, you know, there's an urgency here on these questions. And, you know, given, so Dr. King said, he said, given that our international black athletic superstars are used to sell an idea to the world about the state of racial equality or inequality in the United States, then they have every right to say, wait a minute, the world is being sold a fiction. And just because, you know, we, as Dr. Harry Edwards said, just because we run in Mexico City doesn't mean we should have to crawl home.
Thank you, Dave.
There's a lot about Dr. King and how it relates to our program today.
Yes.
And you know, it can't say his name without also pointing out that the Major League Baseball season was supposed to start the day after his assassination. And it took Roberto Clemente, another person at that, a titan.
Oh, yeah.
Sports and politics. It took Roberto Clemente, just a person who once said that he never knew he was black in Puerto Rico until he played in the south of the United States in the Jim Crow minor league system. Roberto Clemente, who said Major League Baseball cannot, must not, will not play right away. We need some games to process, to work in our communities, which were, of course, you know, ravaged by an uprising that took place in D.C. just blocks away from the White House. out of the anger and frustration that took place after Dr. King was killed. So there was, my goodness, so much to say about Dr. King. Do you know who his favorite baseball player was? This is a little tidbit I found.
No, go.
You're going to love this. Dr. King's favorite baseball player, Bob Gibson.
I was going to say Bob Gibson, but he was one of my favorites, so I didn't want to jump out there like that. Dave, you're beautiful, man. And this is why I dig you, and you're my brother from another mother, as we always say. I found that, so busy and a lot going on, and folks understand, we have a production, Dave, with every guest. We talk what we're going to, subject we're going to hit and so forth. And I just, somebody walking by, I mentioned that, hey, you know, happy Martin Luther King's birthday. And I said, whoa, oh yeah, it is. So I had not time to reach out to Dave and say this, but I knew when I dropped Martin Luther King's day on you that you would have a nice story to tell. You would put it part and parcel together. That's you. So I appreciate that. And I want the audience to know that was not rehearsed, that we did not have time to talk or even text about it, because I just found out 5 minutes ago. It came back to memory. And that's the wisdom of Dave Zirin. I thank you, brothers. And I want the audience to know that was spontaneous and straight from the heart, my brother. So, So anyway, we can move on to basketball if you want.
before we move on to basketball, I want to let the audience know that if anybody has any questions or based on anything that we're talking about on this show, I'm actually going to take calls at the bottom of the hour. 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. I'm actually going to have a question that I want to ask the people out there. And you're going to hear that at 10:30. So, folks, get ready for that. 202-588-0893. But, Coach.
Yes, sir.
To the question at hand, as somebody who has had a front row seat to the evolution of the women's game, a front row seat, did you ever think by as early as 2024 you would see a time where, not a championship game, an Elite Eight tournament game would get higher ratings than every single thing on the sports landscape, save Sunday, Monday night NFL football? Did you ever think that would happen by 2024?
The timetable, maybe not. But yes, it saw it coming, because as you watch the girls' game, and remember, I'm a 30-year plus referee of the game at the high school level and some college, and there's a lot of traction to the women's game, the way it's played. A lot of people say it's more of a team concept. It's not the ego and fancy between your legs and dunking, which you don't see in a lot in the women's game, although they're doing more and more of that now. And so you saw it coming. You saw it coming with AAU. It's gotten just as big on the women's side as on the men's side. My daughter played it, reffed it from high school level. And then, you can see it coming. And women athletes are exposed to the same things with the men's athlete in terms of training and trainers and weight training and diet and so forth. So, yeah, you saw it coming. When was the question, here it is.
Well, now why is the question, too.
Excuse me?
The why is the big question.
Why? Because it's a good watch. For one, the game is a good watch. Yeah, it's not dunking, but the team play, the shooting, the scoring, it's a good watch. Now, and I'm going to you asked me the question because I was going to ask you that. Now, this one, there's another thing here. In the women's game, outside of the men's game, most stay for four. And you have to, if you go into the NBA, because you have to stay longer to get into the NBA, whereas one and done in the men's game. So now. Stars, you have that with the NCAA men had at one point, and that was guys staying in college, and you get to watch them. The greatest game in terms of ever watched, it was Magic Bird. Now, Magic went after 2 years, but I think Bird was a four-year guy, although he transferred. He originally signed to Indiana and left and went to Indiana State. But anyway.
Larry Bird was a 23-year-old rookie.
Right. yeah, he's been around a little bit. So now, in the women's games, the stars stay around longer because they have to. I guess somebody could go to court and probably get it so they could be one and done too. But as of right now, they can't. So you have a Caitlin now, star. She broke records and is the greatest star of all time. And you had others before that, Cheryl Swoop, Cheryl Miller, Maya Moore, so forth and so on. So yeah, you can have that. Now, my question. So I think, did I answer your question? Because I want to shoot the question in another way to you.
Well, you answered it. I don't agree with you, but you answered.
Well, let's start there. I love an argument. I'm a referee, so let's do it.
All right, this is what I think. But before I say what I think, let's go to a very, very quick break right now. If we have the ability to do so, because it's 10:15. We want everybody to just take a deep breath and realize that this is The Collision, 89.3 FM, WPFW. It's your home for jazz and justice, changing the world one broadcast at a time. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back after this quick station break, and I'm going to tell Coach why he's wrong and why the game is erupting as it is. We'll be back right after this.
Rodney O, Rodney O, DJ Joe Cooley. Bass that's in your face, show enough shrugs your face, just like you got sprayed by a can of mace. You see your speaker is moving, everybody is grooving, my song moves along as it starts improving. The highs will get no higher, the bass will go no lower, cause everlasting bass show enough moves a flower. Some people can't take it, they try to plead the case, but you can't get enough of everlasting bass.
We are back here on The Collision. Kevin McNutt. I'm Dave Zirin here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM WPFW. That was Rodney O and Joe Cooley, Everlasting Bass. I'm sure Coach has that rocking in his...
all the time, Dave. hey, Dave, before you get into it, you call me on your wrong, because I know I'm right. But I think probably because I left out a big segment, because I was trying to set you up, you know, trying to feed you, coming down the court, and going to give you the assist. Because I think I know where you're going with it. But now you jump the gun and you bring the ball down yourself and want to shoot the three. So, because I know I'm right, but I'm getting, but in my question was another part of the puzzle. And this, here's the question. I bet you this is where you're going. How much does race have to do with this issue?
We're going to get to that.
Okay.
But first, we have to talk about the objective realities. Because I think dealing with a situation right now that's like a Larry Bird situation where before I talk about the Larry Bird situation, let me clear about this one thing. Caitlin Clark is the best thing to happen to women's college basketball since the death of the corset and the hoop skirt.
Okay. Wow.
Caitlin Clark. is the shock of the new. Caitlin Clark, in my basketball lifetime, reminds me of the first time Jordan played at Madison Square Garden as a rookie, and he jumped up in the air, and he cuffed the dunk in one hand and did a double pump with one arm, and it was like you'd never really seen anything like that before. So it was like shock of the new. You had to watch Michael Jordan, not so much because he was a good shooter or had great fundamentals, which he had, of course, but because he was different. The shock of the new, he was different. I mean, you had to watch Steph Curry because it was different.
There you go. I like Curry as a comparison more so than Jordan.
Steph, of course, makes more sense stylistically, but I'm just talking about the shock of the new. You know what I'm saying? Like LeBron was kind of like this incredible combination of several different players. You know, like as if Michael Jordan and Charles Oakley had a baby or something. So that wasn't so much the shock of the new. Jordan was the shock of the new. Steph Curry's the shock of the new. Caitlin Clark is the shock of the new. Her average 3-point shot is 26 feet away from the hoop. She regularly pulls up from the logo. She's the best passer I've seen, men or women, maybe. I mean, I'm trying to think about it. Maybe since Sherman Douglas from Syracuse back in the day. I mean, an incredible, incredible passer. On the pro level, it's Luka Doncic level passing. So you have the shock of the new, people wanting to see what they have never seen before. And what that has done is it creates all kinds of eyeballs for other people. Like, whoa, who is this Angel Reese and what's she doing? Hey, there's this freshman named Juju Watkins, who's also looks like somebody we've never seen before. So all of a sudden, all these other players get shine because of the shock of the new that Caitlin Clark represents. That being said.
Yes and no. I mean, it accelerated it.
I got to finish my that being said, though. Otherwise,
that being said. Okay, I thought you. Go ahead.
No. That being said, it would also be profoundly ignorant and frankly against the ethos of everything I've ever studied about sports in my entire life to not also point out that when you cross the shock of the new with whiteness, particularly in a sport that's been historically, at least recent historically, been dominated by the black athlete in a society that has so much racism and so much division, all the stuff we know, it creates a different level of hysteria, a different level of fandom, a different level of oh my goshness. So who is Caitlin Clark? I say she's like Larry Bird, because Bird was also somebody who we really just hadn't seen before. Somebody 6'9 and a half who could pass the way he could pass, who could shoot from where he could shoot. And then, oh, by the way, Larry Bird was also white. And that sent it into a different kind of a stratosphere in terms of the Bird phenomenon. And it was a phenomenon that Magic was able, I mean, there's a whole other discussion about the way Magic was able to play off of that and increase his own Q rating and star power through his own individual greatness. But having, as Magic will be the first to tell you, having Bird to play off of amplified himself. And I think that's Caitlin Clark, is that, and you're going to see that this weekend as well in the Final Four. I really wish she was playing Juju Watkins, but that's a whole other conversation, because then we could have really been getting into some fun Magic Bird conversations, because I think Juju Watkins is just that special. But, you know, she'll play Paige Beckers at UConn. That'll be interesting, too. But it's just to say that I think that Caitlin Clark possesses something that, when cross-pollinated with whiteness, creates an American catnip. Mm. And it made a women's college basketball in the present tense a phenomenon, where it's at every corner bar, where it's, you know, playing in college dorm rooms. My buddy owns a bar in New York. He said people came in the bar in droves insisting that the game come on. And this is in Brooklyn. So, you know, in Brooklyn, people want to see Iowa women play basketball. That's different. And that's the Caitlin Clark effect. That's why I said the most important thing to happen to women's college basketball since the death of the corset and the hoop skirt.
I'm not going there on that one, but yeah, all green. And she accelerated, because, I mean, the game was already moving forward that way. A couple years ago, Notre Dame was in the final, and I can't think of the young lady's name. She had two buzzer beaters to get them in the, I think, the semifinal and the championship game. So the wave was going. The wave was coming ashore. And it was, and matter of fact, it wasn't just a wave. It was almost a tidal wave or tsunami. And she accelerated to where the ratings were. But so I'm not really disagreeing with there, but I like your catnip phrase, because – the racial component here is big. You had, by the way, I gotta say, Bird fed off Magic more so. Now, I know Bird was white, and I know that's a big part of your statement, but Bird, I don't like what you said that. You said Magic played off Bird, and I was opposite, because remember, Magic won the title, and Magic was 6'9", had a personality. He had things you had not seen before in terms of his ball handling, vision, all the things he could do. It'd go with his personality. So I'm not. I gotta check that.
I'll only admit that they fed off each other.
Okay. Well, I accept that, but I'm still gonna say, just for the record, I'm gonna say it was Bird feeding off of Magic. But go ahead. Because we want to stay on the women's subject, we leave that alone. So yeah, I see it, but I the racial component just can't be ignored by you, me, and I'm glad you brought it up because I brought it up, but it's real because you had LSU. Yeah. You're right. Kayla was must see, and she's Curry of the women's game, but you can't ignore that it was a rematch of last year's title, but you had the trash talking issue, the Reese and her going back and forth. You had predominantly black LSU team. You know, the coach, help me out, Dave, real quick. Kim Mulkey now. Okay, yes. You know, you have her as a white shadow, if you will. And so, you know, all those are all parts of it that should not be ignored. And if you're talking this conversation, you have to bring that up.
No, what I don't have to bring up, though, is comparing Kim Mulkey to the white shadow, though. Because
I'm saying that. Let me jump there. I'm saying that because I didn't add. Because the ratings will increase if we have a Iowa-South Carolina final. Because then you got Don Staley, who's going to be going with a 36-0 now, going for 30-0, become undefeated, the second black woman to win an NCAA title to Carolyn Peck. But she's going for an undefeated, never been done by a black coach at this level, men or women. So, and that's going to, I think, but championship game, but that's going to drive ratings up too.
Very true, and that will drive ratings up. And I think Caitlin Clark, though, is the magnet from which all emanates because the storyline was Caitlin Clark, LSU. Now the storyline is going to be Caitlin Clark against the school that did not want her, UConn, as well as Paige Beckers. But the school that did not want her is going to be – she was interested in going to UConn at a high school. They were like, eh, we got other people. And now she's Caitlin Clark.
Dave, I'm a fan. And you gave me that during the intro. I did not even know that. So I don't think that's carrying, that's driving the bus too far.
Okay, that won't drive the bus. But then against Staley. Staley, they first got to beat NC State, of course.
Right. Oh, and Iowa, UConn, who you got Geno and all his 11 titles. And I don't understand. You Paige Beukers could have been Caitlin Clark had she not had two ACLs that cost her the better part of two seasons.
Well, Paige Buckets, as she's known, still does have a chance. She's going to come back next year.
Oh, is that right? Okay, that's good. Good for her.
Still has the chance to fulfill all expectations. And let's remember, Paige went to two Final Fours her first 2 years, so she's built a nice career for herself, but not, you know, people thought Paige was going to be Caitlin Clark.
Right. Well, actually, Caitlin was not on the scene at that level. I mean, it could have been the other way around, although Paige has the skills. I mean, Caitlin has a skill set that I'm not sure Paige. I don't know Paige can do from range the way that Caitlin does it. I mean, you know, Curry range. And here's another thing. But Geno had more 5-stars than she had.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. Paige reminds me of Rip Hamilton, actually.
Really?
The comparison. Like, she's constantly moving without the ball. Yeah. She's much stronger than her frame would suggest. She looks slight, but she'll barrel into you. She's fearless.
Yep.
And Rip Hamilton, you know, former Wizard, I've always felt was a very underrated player. But we also don't have to keep comparing women to men. It's just a useful comparison point for the listeners so they know where we're coming from. I just want to talk about that.
Good point.
But Caitlin Clark, to me, has the it factor and whiteness. And that's the cat that exists. Because let's be honest, there have been a lot of great white hopes who are great white nopes in every single sport.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whiteness is not enough. You also have to be able to bring something. And that's why, you know, that's why black players love Larry Bird. You know, like, you hear them talk about Larry Bird. Like, I mean, Isaiah Thomas and Dennis Rodman didn't back in the day, but even like they have said since then, like, yeah, Larry was the greatest trash talker. Larry was this. Larry was that. You know, and Larry used to say, you know, when they would have a white guy guard me, I'd be insulted. Said that.
Well, and then you're talking Bird. Here's another one we have to mention in that context is Bill Walton, who, when everybody was trying to prop him up, not everybody, but the white media, you know, he rebelled at that I'm the great white hope. He said, no, I'm with the brothers, man. I know what they've been through. I know that, they've all been teammates all his life. And he says, I'm with them. I'm not trying to be no black white hope. I'm with the brothers, man.
Well, you know, and Caitlin Clark, while she has never said just straight up, like Bill Walton was one of those 1960s cats who was like, I renounce my whiteness. I stand with the black revolution and the people of Vietnam. Like, he was coming from that context. But Caitlin Clark, to her immense credit, last year and this year too, the media tried to throw out, you know, that chum in the water and say, go after LSU, go after Angel Reese, give us that rivalry, give us that red meat, give us that blood in the water. And, you know, Angel Reese talked trash to you. You should talk trash back. Caitlin Clark never took that bait, ever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The other thing Caitlin Clark did with a lot of intentionality was when she broke Kelsey Plum's NCAA record, points in the women's game. She was the one who made the point to say, well, wait a minute. There was a basketball league before the NCAA that women were at the heart of. And there was somebody by Kansas by the name of Lynette Woodard. You know, a black woman. Who just an amazing, amazing player. And also, by the way, the first woman to ever play for a men's professional team when she signed with the Harlem Globetrotters in 1985, but she called out Lynette Woodard and gave Lynette Woodard shine when she didn't have to or need to or anything of the sort. So I like Caitlin Clark. I feel she's there's a lot of self-consciousness by Caitlin Clark as far as like who she is, what she represents, and, you know, not trying to walk with too heavy a foot when it comes to being the great white hope.
Dave, the pressure that she has been under,
yes,
people don't understand, man. Chasing that record, and you can't walk away. You can barely, you know, have a deep breath without being asked about it. When you're going to get it? How you're going to get it? And you know, I think it took a couple games longer to get it because of all the pressure. You know, it wears down on her. People are saying it. She's tackled that with class. The loss last year with class. The try to make a rivalry, black or white, what have you, with Angel Reese and LSU. Everything's had a class. Even last week, I think I mentioned to you that the 3-on-3 thing with Ice Cube, you know, they hit her with that, which I thought was a PR move more than anything else, because it could have waited to Tuesday, you know, after her career is over. So she's been bombarded in so many ways. The Olympics are next in the future. They talked to her about that. And she's handled everything with class and thought, as well as shining on the court. Absolutely.
I mean, given the pressure she was under for that LSU game, to come out and drop 41 points, 12 assists, 7 or 8 rebounds with all that pressure on her was wild. Now, Kim Mulkey, the coach of LSU, has been criticized a great deal. You know, it wasn't just Caitlin Clark's greatness. It was Kim Mulkey's very bad defensive scheme.
Okay, I was going to bring it up. Go ahead.
Well, just someone had a great line. You know, Kim Mulkey, of course, her mind was on this Washington Post expose, which turned out to be a bit of a dud.
Really, agree.
About her and her history. But Kim Mulkey was out in front of that story saying she had a team of lawyers ready to sue the Washington Post. A lot of the jokes that were going around, Coach, was, wow, Kim Mulkey had a better defensive plan against the Washington Post than she did against Caitlin Clark.
I get a lot of calls on that. And I'm like, okay, I mean, she has 4 rings, I guess, or something like that number. So it's hard to be critical. I mean, it's hard for us to be critical of her. But
I'll be critical of Kim Mulkey. That's what makes this difficult, because the other part of this discussion, and Coach, I don't know how much time you have right now, is Angel Reese, you know, Baltimore's own. We have a lot for Angel Reese in the state of Maryland. Angel Reese speaking about the death threats that she'd gotten because of this trash talk. She talks her trash. She admits that. And yet the response, because frankly, she's a black woman doing this, you know, has been so beyond the pale, so horrifically offensive. And, you know, the column that was in the L.A. Times calling them the dirty debutantes. Like, yes. Yes. What's that, Brent Musburger writing in 1968 about Smith and John Carlos?
Yeah, paratroopers.
What nonsense is that?
What did Musburger say? Because I still rail when I hear that. Black paratroopers?
Brent, no, black paratroopers, no.
Whatever he said.
He called Tommy Smith and John Carlos, quote unquote, black-skinned stormtroopers.
Stormtroopers, okay. There's nails on the chalkboard every time I hear it.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Yep.
Well, Coach, I don't know what your situation is, man. I'd love to hear who you like in the Final Four. But do you have to run or what?
This is so good, man. I do have to run, but I'll give you five more, man.
All right, we're going to go to break in 5 minutes, and then we're going to take calls, if that's okay. We got a couple of callers on the line. So, Coach, just lay it out for me, and then we'll go to a station break. Who do you like, buddy?
What you doing, men's or women? What are we talking about here?
Both.
Okay. I'm Dawn Staley all the way. Remarkable what she's done. 36-0, lost all five starters, comes back, and puts the team together after losing in the semis last year. I got to root for her. This is history in the making. She's classed. I mean, they had a little dust up with LSU in that game. She went on TV minutes after the game and apologized for the sport of women's sport. I love her. I'm pulling for her all the way. Yeah, Caitlin, you've been great. And by the way, there's debate about Caitlin being the GOAT if she gets a title. I hear you because of Pistol Pete's record. But I will also say this, that Breonna Stewart, was 4-for-4. She's the cream of NCAA basketball. Breonna Stewart won 4 titles at UConn. You can't do better than that. Give me Dawn Staley. In the men's game, real quick, Dave, and I'm out. A couple of interesting things. NC State, the last team that won five games in a conference tournament, went on to win the title. It's only been done twice. That was UConn with Kimball Walker. So that's something of interest. Purdue, obviously. 116 upset to Fairleigh Dickinson last year. That happened to Virginia and a 116 upset to UMBC. They came back and won the title. Is that Purdue's destiny? Then you got UConn trying to win back-to-back titles. Have been done since 06-07 with Florida. A lot of stuff there. Give me UConn. I've said it the day one. I've said it on your show. They got two of everything. Pros, bigs, shooters, defenders. Give me them. It sounds like chalk, but that's where I am.
I agree with everything you just said, except for one small thing.
Well, come on. I'd love to argue with you, my friend.
No, I know. But I can't help it. I agree with you at UConn on the men's side. The women's side, I agree with you that South Carolina has to be seen as the prohibitive favorites. The one thing I disagree with you is that if Caitlin Clark wins the title, absolutely. GOAT. Absolutely.
Is that okay?
Breonna Stewart was playing the equivalent of first base for the 27 New York Yankees. I mean, she was on UConn when UConn was running on every single possible cylinder whatsoever. Right. Caitlin Clark is taking an Iowa team without that kind of tradition, without that kind of infrastructure, and frankly, a team that lost a couple of its best players from last year's team also. And she can drag that team across the finish line to a title, we have to have a serious conversation.
I love it.
All right. I got to say. Yeah, well, Coach, thank you so much for joining us here on Edge of Sports.
Always, Dave.
Thank you enough. Wish we could have you for the whole hour.
Oh, man, I would love to be hanging with the call-ins, but I'm pressed for time here, brother. So we might do it afterwards. We'll see what we get.
Yeah, and so great to talk to you, Coach. The call-in number is 202-588-0893. We're going to go to our callers in the moment. First, we got to go to a station break. And I have a prompt question for the callers as well. But for now, I'll just say, Coach, have a great weekend in the cave. Yeah. Let's text. Let's text it up during these games.
You know that. And the best thing about getting out the show a little bit early is I don't hear you lobbying for your Wendy's commercial about Stay Frosty. Bye, man.
Stay Frosty, Coach.
Oh, no.
Got you.
Bye.
Boom. Bye. All right, we'll be back right after this, everybody, here on The Collision, WPFW, where sports and politics collide.
6 a.m, police at my door. Fresh Adidas squeak across the bathroom floor. Out my back window, I make my escape. Didn't even get a chance to grab my old school tape. Mad with no music, happy cause free. And the streets to a player is the place to be. Got a knot in my pocket, weighing at least a grand. Gold on my neck, my my pistols close in hand. I'm a self-made monster of the city streets, remotely controlled by hard hip-hop beats. But just living in the city is a serious task. Didn't know what the cops wanted, didn't have time to ask. About the night before, posse to the corner where the fly girls chill, threw action at some freaks till one bitch got ill. She started acting silly, said we would not quit, call us all punk till we are one. As we walked over to a hoe, continued to speak, so we beat the bitch down in the goddamn.
Boom! We are back on the Collision, where sports and politics collide. I'm Dave Zirin. We just said goodbye to Coach Kevin McNutt. We just listened to Six in the Morning, the breakthrough track by Ice-T. Wow, between Ice-T and Rodney O and Joe Cooley, I'm wondering what coast we're on right now. But I love hearing all of it. We got some callers on the line. I do have a prompt question for the callers, but let's see what the people who've called in want to say. And I'm happy to answer any and all questions. Caller, yes, please. You are on the line with Dave Zirin here on The Collision.
Would that be me?
That would be you, sir.
All right. Wow, this is a rarity of all rarities, and I'm definitely a collector of rarities to talk to the great Dave Zirin. You rarely open the phones, but this is just, I'm just, you know, enamored to be able to speak with you, sir. I just wanted to ask, because of that rarity, you'd be the kind of cat that I would recall playing Stratego or a battleship while we were deciding which sport we were going to pick, maybe at 10 or 11 years old. Eons before internet, maybe a black and white CRT while your parents were there. And I say all of that to say the volume being turned up and down, the switches being turned on and off where sports and politics collide, how soon we might forget. We haven't heard a peep about the culmination of the Brittany Griner effect, and I haven't been able to find anything about it. With you being the supreme expert, could you update your audience, your public, of which I happen to be a member, as to where that stands and what that represents? What was the takeaway from the Brittany Griner effect?
That's a great question. First and foremost, are you speaking about the effect of her arrest and return to the WNBA?
Yeah, more or less the outcome, especially since we're talking about women in sports today. You know, you started off the show with that theme. I thought this might be a relevant question to ask.
What's your name, sir? Please tell our callers.
My name's R.G. Shalom. Awesome. You know, I could just say that to you. If I don't need to disclose the actual name, I could probably drop you an email or something. But
hey, man, anytime. I appreciate you calling the show. I appreciate the love for the Collision. Let me break it down about Brittany Griner for everybody. Griner is somebody who could be the person that we speak about as far as who transformed the game when she played at the collegiate level. I mean, really like a Victor Wembanyama type on defense, someone who could blot out the sun, block a three-point shot from inside the painted area with one big step. Really like nobody we'd ever seen. People know, of course, about her arrest in Russia, right. Being held hostage by the Russian government as part of a prisoner swap. And now she's in a point of attempting to readjust to society. She had a great season this past year with the Phoenix Mercury. She was an all-star, a tremendous return on a number of fronts. I know that she's dealing with the psychological after effect of being in a Russian prison for 9 months and facing 10 years in a Russian prison camp up in Siberia. I mean, this wasn't going to be some country club prison that she was going to end up in. So, and it would have been, you know, basically the end of her life to have to be in a prison like that. I mean, the survival would have been unreal. I mean, she had to already in the months she was there, she had to cut her locks off because they were freezing in the prison where she was. So, Not an easy experience by any stretch of the imagination. The fact that she's healthy and well and back doing what she's supposed to be doing and frankly, just still herself, which is all you could really ask for after an experience like that. Love to Brittany Griner, and we will continue to follow her narrative as it moves forward. Thank you so much for the call. Very appreciated.
All right.
Be well. The number is 202-588-0893. I do have my prompt question, but first, let's go to the next caller, and then I promise I'll let everybody know what's on my mind, because it's about D.C. politics, so it's on my mind, and it's throbbing greatly like the great vein that exists in my temple right now. So who do we have next on the line?
Hey, Dave, this is Chris. I'm calling you from Clarksburg, Maryland.
Oh, wonderful. I love Clarksburg. Talk to us.
Hey, I appreciate you and Coach pointing out this is the anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King's murder. But I also want to point out today is the anniversary of his Beyond Vietnam speech that he made at Riverside Church in New York on April 4th, 1967, 1 year to the day before he was murdered, and point out the relevance of that even today, because he focused on the evil triplets of poverty, racism, and militarism, and pointed out that the greatest purveyor of violence in the world at that day was the U.S. government. I think that's still true in light of the genocide in Palestine and the U.S. government's complicity in that. So I appreciate the opportunity to add that to the show.
Man, I more than appreciate the fact that you called. I would also point out that the full line of where he talks about the greatest purveyor of violence is my own government, is he said, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but he said, I will never again raise my voice against violence in the inner cities, before pointing out that the greatest purveyor of violence is my own government. Given that today we're living in an era where, once again, crime hysteria is getting ramped up to an unprecedented degree, and I think it's so important for us to remember where the sources and roots of violence actually come from in our society. I mean, my goodness, they're starving over 1.5 million people to death right now in Gaza, and they expect us to be upset about violence on the corner when violence is U.S. exported policy through Israel. So I really do appreciate your call and you pointing that out. All right, so thank you so much. 202-588-0893. Let me give a prompt out here, and I want to know if we only have a few more minutes, but I got to talk about this. I got to talk about the D.C. budget. Mayor Muriel Bowser, have people seen this budget that she has put forward for the D.C. City Council to rubber stamp? The name of the budget is called this: Fair Shot, Strategic Investments, and Shared Sacrifice. I don't know about you, but I don't hear anything in that other than the words shared sacrifice. Now, what this shared sacrifice means is we are going to see in D.C. $500 million in budget cuts, more money for police, and higher tourism taxes, which you know always filters down and becomes higher taxes and higher prices, I should say, inflation on working class people. Meanwhile, $500 million in cuts, $500 million also pledged for the Wizards and Capitals to redo Capital One Arena with more amenities and, yes, more police. So what do we think about this? 202-588-0893. What do we think about the D.C. budget being something that looks to be something that's going to be budgeted on our backs, yet at the same time, a lot of money is going to go into Ted Leonsis's pocket. Ted Leonsis, owner of the Capitals, Wizards, and Mystics. Ted Leonsis, who's worth several $1 billion himself. When are these sports teams owners going to start paying for their own darn stadiums? But maybe people out there disagree with me. Maybe you think we need that investment in the Gallery Place Chinatown neighborhood. Maybe you think $500 million is a wise investment. Maybe you think it'll bring jobs. I personally would disagree with that, but this is a safe space for you to say what you think. 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. What do you think of the mayor's budget? Fair Shot, Strategic Investments, and Shared Sacrifice. What do you think about $500 million in cuts while all this money has been pledged to keep the Wizards and Capitals in D.C.? And let me just also keep in mind that y'all know that I'm glad they're going to stay in D.C. instead of going to Virginia, because as we said last week, if you have a team called the Virginia Wizards, they might as well be wearing white hoods. So let's get a call in right now, see what people think about this issue, or frankly, if there's anything else you want to raise, that's why I'm here. Caller, you're on the line.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes. First, I love your show and your work. Keep it up. I'm a D.C. resident. I believe billionaires should spend their own money. I don't believe any D.C. Taxpayers' money should be going to help them out. And the reason why I called, I want your feedback on why this preoccupation with who is the GOAT. It really bothers me. It's not necessarily you, but just, you know, I know everyone's always talking about who's the GOAT and this and that. To me, this is my belief. You show me someone who's played all times, and then we can discuss the GOAT. To me, it's based. There's no scientific basis for it. People played during different eras. The science is different during the time periods, as far as, you know, health and nutrition and fitness. The rules may differ. So to me, it's just a. It's. I know people like you just talk, but to me, we shouldn't even be bothered with that discussion. Plus, I get a sense that it reflects this preoccupation with a certain value system of trying to say who is number one. And I think that is, and who's the best. And I think there's some, I have some problems with that because it reflects to me on some negative things as far as someone has to be always the best. And then if you're not the best, then you're nobody. So that's my feedback.
Wow. You're saying that it's that peculularly American mentality that says if you ain't first, you're last.
Right.
So binary, winners or losers. You know what? I love this call. I absolutely love this call because I agree with it big time. I think the GOAT conversation, it's an easy conversation for radio. It provides debate and friction. It provides the opportunity to do those comparisons of different eras and see how relevant they are or aren't. But at the end of the day, you're right. It's very much a reflection of the worst parts of sports culture. That says there's no greater goal than being the best. Not being a great teammate, but being the best. Like, it always made me sad when Magic Johnson would say, oh, I'm not the best Laker of all time. That's Kobe Bryant. That's Kareem. That's Shaq. And I would say, but Magic, you made everybody else better. And shouldn't that count for something? So I love this call. Thank you so much for giving us some much-needed perspective. Unfortunately, we only have time for one more caller. Can we get them on real quick? Excellent. Who do we have, sir, or ma'am, or anybody?
Hello, this is Gus.
Oh, hello.
How are you? Just calling to talk about the first of all, I co-signed on that GOAT comment. You know, it's to me, it's like sort of comparing the secretary who had a computer with the one who only had a typewriter. It just doesn't make sense to me. But I also want to just alert on that, on the whole piece of the D.C. sports financing. As you know, I'd write a column for a Black Agenda Report. Just wrote a piece on that. Essentially, it's the same old playbook. It's basically a form of sports gentrification, most of these deals. And, you know, they'll boast about the jobs and things like that. Most of the jobs are seasonal and very lower minimum wage and or very little benefits, if any, when, in fact, the best jobs absolutely don't go to the people in the neighborhood. So, yeah, it's really – I'm a sports fan. I love – I'm in a group that has season tickets to the Wizards, but at the end of the day – it's really theft of public money, especially in a jurisdiction that has one of the highest cost of living in the country. So that's my take.
Thank you, Gus Griffin. I really do appreciate that. And I know your last name because the writing for Black Agenda Report is so amazing. Unless they have numerous Gus's writing amazing articles, but I'm going to roll the dice and say this is Gus Griffin. but Gus, send me your piece. I will put it out on Twitter. I will blast it out on social media. Anything you write is great. And when you venture into sports, you know you're right in my fun zone. Well, yo, everybody out there listening, I really enjoyed this. We're going to do more call-ins in the future. It was a lot of fun to hear from you directly. Hopefully y'all had fun too calling in. Thank you so much to Coach Kevin McNutt. Thank you so much to everybody at WPFW. Thank you so much to Katia Stitt for having the idea that we should do some call-ins this week. Yo, everybody, we have so much more to discuss, but the time is dwindling. For everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace.
And do things I know you like. Out of the ordinary, like catch a matinee, baby. You are the prototype. I think I'm in love again. I think I'm in love. Lord knows I don't want that, but hey, we can't be mad at God. We met today for a reason. I think I'm on the right track now.
Baba Eze, one of the co-hosts of the Liberatory Educational Show, hashtag You Must Learn, that can be heard on most Thursdays, 6 p.m. I am wishing WPFW a 47th birthday celebration and hoping that those who are listening will join me in making a $47 donation in honor of WPFW, or that folk will consider becoming a $47 sustainer, making a monthly donation. Go online to WPFWFM.org, make a donation that makes a difference.
Born of Haitian descent, Jerry Paris, WPFW's general manager, is moving on to retirement. On April 14th, from 3 p.m. until 7 p.m., we will celebrate his departure at the VIP room, 6201 3rd Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., with island flair, steel drums, a DJ, and food from the islands. That's April 14th from 3 p.m. until 7 p.m. For more information and tickets, call 202-368-4081 or visit Eventbrite and search for Jerry Paris Retirement. Seating is limited. Do.
The search process for WPFW's next general manager is underway. Successful management searches begin by having conversations with stakeholders to clarify and document expectations for future management. Therefore, WPFW's local station board is inviting all stakeholders to participate in our online survey. Go to WPFWFM.org and press the link to complete the survey.